Are pharmaceutical companies misleading us about what it really costs to develop a new drug? Most of the new cancer drugs which have come onto the market in recent years have had huge price tags, tens of thousands of dollars per course or per year, and healthcare systems are struggling to afford them. One of the reasons given by the pharmaceutical industry is the cost of developing and bringing one of these drugs to market and fulfilling the regulatory requirements for safety and effectiveness. Figures as high as $2 or $3 billion US have been quoted. But a new study has found that the real figure might be a lot less, and that for some companies, the subsequent income has been enormous relative to the investment. One of the authors was Vinay Prasad, who's in the Knight Cancer Institute at Oregon Health and Science University in Portland.
There have been other studies on the topic of the R&D outlay needed to bring a drug to market, but they have all had limits. And we decided to focus on 10 drugs that were sort of a unique natural sample. We picked 10 drug companies that had no drugs on the market that were able to successfully bring a single drug to market out of a portfolio of drugs that often included many other drugs.
Why did that make it easier to study?
So the thing about these drug companies is that they were pursuing a bunch of drugs to bring one drug to market. They didn't have other drugs already on the market. And the reason that that matters is that some of these large companies that have many drugs on the market, much of their R&D outlay in the Securities and Exchange's filings, it might be for developing those drugs that are already approved for perhaps off-label uses or perhaps other indications, and not really about bringing a new drug to market. By focusing on these companies, we could focus on the cost of bringing a new drug to market.
Just to be clear, if you're talking about a large established pharmaceutical company, they've got a big portfolio of cancer drugs, rheumatic diseases, heart disease, and so on, and you can never be quite sure whether the R&D for one entity is in fact purely for that entity. It could be mixed with a whole sort of other issues and drugs.
Exactly. Their R&D spending for these big companies that have so many products, part of it might be to bring a new drug to market, but the other part might be to further push the market share of existing drugs. And the other thing to point out is that these companies have enjoyed rather lavish profits for many years, and they may have become bloated or inefficient at bringing drugs to market, and their R&D costs may become exaggerated.
So these were kind of young and hungry drug companies who were pursuing a vision of a drug, all in cancer?
Yes, that's right. They all had a drug product approved by the Hematology or Oncology Drug Products Division of the US FDA.
So just give us a flavor of what sort of drugs they were and for what conditions?
We had drugs in this sample that treated very common types of leukemia, drugs in this sample that treated prostate cancer, a drug that treated lymphoma. These drugs really span the range of the sorts of uses of drugs in hematology and oncology.
And you took the R&D costs from what they filed to the Securities Commission?
That's right. For each of these compounds, we identified the date the company bought the drug, and we included the cost of purchasing that compound. Or for the companies that developed the drug, we found the first instance that drug was ever mentioned in the biomedical literature, and we gave them 2 years on top of that.
And what did you find?
What we found was that the cost to bring a single cancer drug to market was about $650 million. And if you allow the company to have a 7% lost opportunity cost, or basically you say that had the company not developed this drug and invested this money instead, and you give them some credit for that, then the cost comes to about $750 million. But that's notable because it's much lower than the prevailing figure of $2.6 billion, which comes from the Tufts Medical Group.
And you feel these figures were accurate?
I think we're pretty confident that we're putting our finger on the pulse of what it actually costs to bring a cancer drug to market. Our methods are fully transparent and open. Anyone with an internet connection can check our work. And that's something that sets us apart from the other major analysis on this topic by the Tufts Medical Group, where all of the data are proprietary secret and no one has had the chance to examine it. Anyone can look at our numbers.
So the other side of the equation is what money they made, and it's not a crime to make money. Some of them are quite extraordinary. So whilst your average was in the, towards 700 million, there was one drug, enzalutamide. Their cost of development in R&D was 473 million, and their revenue was 21 billion. Another one for ibrutinib, the cost of development was 388 million and the revenue was 22 billion. That's nice work if you can get it.
That's an incredible margin. And you don't see margins like that in any other sector of the economy. And the other thing I point out is that drug enzalutamide, that drug was heavily funded through NIH or US taxpayer funds. So much so that actually Bernie Sanders last year proposed that the U.S. government could actually march in on that drug and actually manufacture that drug at a much lower cost, because so much of the investment for that drug came from the NIH, and that had been proposed but rejected. And what we found basically was, although it cost about $7 billion to bring these 10 drugs to market, just within 4 years of being on the market, collectively, these drugs made $67 billion out of an investment of $7 billion. That's an unheard of revenue after approval. That's a really great margin.
So a lot of these drugs, enzalutamide is not one of them with the $21 billion revenue, but had orphan drug status from the Food and Drug Administration. This means that they've produced a drug for a rare disease where it may not be commercially viable, therefore they get advantages. Now, not in cancer, but in childhood genetic diseases, some of these orphan drugs can cost $1 million a year. You just rely on the fact that there's only three children in Australia, for example, getting them. But does the orphan drug status artificially boost their revenue?
So the one thing the orphan drug status does here, and we didn't even take that into account in our analysis, is the orphan drug status allows these companies to write off some of the expenditure on late phase clinical trials as a tax deduction. So actually some of this R&D outlay is actually maybe even lower than what we state, because it's actually written off as a tax deduction. And that's something we didn't take into account in our analysis, because it hadn't been taken into account in other analyses, and we wanted to be as similar as possible, but it's something that we should keep in mind.
Just going back to the Tufts analysis, which you claimed there was not transparent, where did they get their data from?
And that's the thing, Norman. The Tufts analysis, they got their data from what they call mid-size and large pharmaceutical firms, but they don't tell you the companies, and they don't tell you the years, and they don't tell you the drugs. And so an independent person looking at that study has a great deal of difficulty in actually interpreting it.
Now, there was a debate in the last couple of years over hepatitis C drugs, which cost quite a small amount of money to produce, but were being charged very large sums, you know, $80,000 a course, that sort of thing, although we got it cheaper in Australia. And the argument of the drug company, the manufacturer, was, well, we're charging according to the value that we get. So in other words, if we cure hepatitis C, goes the argument, then we prevent liver transplants, a lot of illness, people get back to work. Therefore, it's worth it to the nation to spend $80,000 on a course. And that's how we've priced our drug, rather than some artificial setting based on our R&D. So to what extent is drug pricing predicated on the R&D costs versus the perceived value in the marketplace?
When it comes to cancer drugs, we formally studied that. We did a paper a couple years ago where we compared the benefit that cancer drugs offer with their annual price. And we actually found for cancer drugs, there was no correlation. Whether you had the most marginal or mediocre drug or a real dramatic drug that really changed outcomes for patients, the price was very comparable. And in both cases, quite horrendous. A very expensive drug.
These are the $60,000 to $80,000 a year drugs in the cancer area, sometimes higher.
That's right. And then the other thing I'd like to say about this question is, one wonders if throughout the history of biomedicine, if everyone who created a really breakthrough product like Jonas Salk when he made the polio vaccine, if Jonas Salk priced the polio vaccine for the net societal benefit, one wonders if we really would have eradicated polio or what the price of the vaccine would have been. To some degree, really transformative therapies have been made broadly available for the public health benefit throughout the course of history. And while I recognize and appreciate that profits are an important driver of innovation, I think we have to ask ourselves as a society, have we gone too far and allowed profits that are too great that come at the expense of so many?
The other costs that the pharmaceutical industry would say that they bear in addition to R&D is marketing costs. So they've got to manufacture the drug. They say that these biologics, and they're often what are called biologics, in other words, they're antibodies often. They're not straightforward chemical manufacturing. Costs a lot of money to manufacture, and then they've got to get it to market. So they claim that's a very large cost to bear. Have you looked at that?
We have, and at least for certain types of cancer drugs, the small molecule drugs, drugs like imatinib, studies show that the cost to manufacture a year of imatinib is on the order of several hundred dollars to, you know, less than $1,000 US to make a year's supply. And yet the sales price of that drug for many years had been approaching $100,000 per year of treatment. So for many of the drugs, the markup from manufacturing cost to sales price is tremendous. Now, you raise the question about biologics, such as these antibody drugs or the new drug you hear about, the CAR-T drug. And absolutely, the cost to make those drugs is a lot higher than the cost to make a small molecule. But it still is dwarfed in comparison to the sales price. And I'll just give you one example. But in a New York Times article in 2012, Carl June, who actually pioneered the CAR T cell, was quoted as saying that the cost to make a CAR T cell should be about $20,000 a person. And just a few weeks ago, Novartis announced the sales price of that medicine will be $475,000 per person.
Just to explain,
which is still
this is
much bigger than the manufacturing price.
This is targeted immune therapy where they sort of charge up the immune cells and infuse them back in a personalized sense.
That's right. It's the first therapy that takes a cell out of a body, educates it to fight cancer, and puts it back in the body.
So what are funders to do with this information?
Many nations have made strides towards balancing the accessibility of drugs and the price of drugs, but the United States has lagged behind. You know, the United States, our main payment body, like the Centers for Medicare Services, they actually cannot...
You're forbidden by legislation to argue the price down. You've got to take the price the pharmaceutical industry offers.
Absolutely. Yeah, we cannot negotiate the price of the drug, nor can we say no to drugs, no matter how marginal they are. Moreover, this is not just for drugs that are approved by the FDA, but drugs that were recommended by one of many expert bodies. So in many ways, in the U.S., the drug market, the payers' hands are tied. They have to pay for this. And so the real question is, what stops the drug maker from charging $1 million a dose, $2 million a dose, or $3 million a dose? And the only thing that stops them from charging those prices is that they don't want to appear on radio programs like this program and on the news. That's the only thing that exerts downward pressure in the United States. You know, our paper actually suggests that one of the persistent arguments against tackling high drug prices is that if you lower the price of drugs, you will stifle innovation. And what we find is revenue after approval is far in excess of R&D outlays, suggesting that there's lots of room to negotiate and to lower drug prices without actually impacting on innovation. I guess the last thing I'd say is that, as you'd imagine, any paper that exerts pressure on the cost of drugs debate is going to create a lot of controversy, and our paper is no exception. There've been a lot of people who are upset about our estimate, and some of that criticism, I think, is fair, but some of it is really off the mark. Part of the reason why this matters so much is that the price of these drugs is so high and the pressure to do something about it is so great. If people believe that the price to make one of these drugs is different than the price in our paper, there's an easy way to answer this question. This doesn't need to be a theoretical exercise. Drug makers can open up their books and allow independent audit of their R&D prices, and that will finally answer this question.
Which answers my last question, which was the generalizability of your findings.
We looked at cancer drugs. So the question is, does our finding apply to all drugs? And the answer is it may not apply to cardiology drugs or Alzheimer's drugs. But actually, a lot and perhaps even the majority of drug development is in the cancer space and in the rare disease space. And in both of these spaces, some of the prerequisites of drug development are rather comparable. And so our estimate may be on the money for those sectors.
Vinay Prasad, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Vinay Prasad is in the Knight Cancer Institute at Oregon Health and Science University in Portland, Oregon. And you're listening to The Health Report here on RN, ABC News and CBC Radio across Canada. I'm Norman Swan.